it's Wolf. The NFL draft is officially 1 week away. So are we 1 week away from getting K1, his wide receiver one? We get going at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
You know, I think last year, it felt like we were on a treadmill that was about, you know, 45 degrees, set at 10 miles an hour, and we were going, and it just, we could never catch up. You know, it felt like we were constantly just trying to get to the point where we felt caught up. And so, you know, I think the difference is this year is that there's still a huge amount of work to do, and that work doesn't go away, but the timeline of that work is where it's supposed to be.
That's GM Monty Austenfort of the Arizona Cardinals, 1 week away from the first round of the NFL draft. That starts next Thursday from Detroit. Cardinals right now still with those two first-round picks, number 4 and number 27 overall. There's Monty Austenfort. That's from about a month ago, Big, talking about the difference between this offseason and last offseason. Pretty confident in the timetable of what they're accomplishing. And Monty Austenfort was very busy in free agency and really taking the time or making the effort to address some holes on the defensive side of the ball. How much of that ground did they make up from a talent standpoint? I think we can agree between us, and I think most people around the league would agree, that the Cardinals last year, despite all the pluses, the effort that they showed for new head coach Jonathan Gannon, they were one of the most talent-poor rosters in the league.
Yeah.
How much did they improve that through free agency, and how much work do they have to do still in the draft is a big question.
Well, it's a huge question because the expectations are going to be higher this coming season. Trying hard, trying until the very end, not going to be good enough again. Building culture is not going to satisfy football fans this year. Coming out of the dysfunction of Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim, last year was enough to know that, okay, thank goodness this football team is back on terra firma. That's not going to be good enough this year. So the talent is going to have to be better, clearly.
Yeah. Interestingly, heading into the draft, Austin Mock, who writes for The Athletic...
Don't tell me he does a mock draft. Don't tell me Austin Mock does mock drafts.
Well, if he didn't, what a waste.
What a branding opportunity that is. Huh?
I know, right? He didn't do a mock draft, okay, but he did do a ranking, which I think should fall into the purview of Adam Rank from NFL.com.
But what the hell is
that's just me.
Who are the ad wizards over there that are missing?
He ranked all 32 NFL teams in terms of talent, how he sees it going into the draft. Cardinals, according to Austin Mock, still have some ground to make up. Ranked him 29th. The snippet that he wrote, Cardinals need a ton of defensive talent. I'm not sure what they'll do at number 4, but it seems like their second first rounder, number 27, should be spent on defense. Cardinals were a frisky team last year under first-year head coach Jonathan Gannon, and with 7 picks in the first 104, the Cardinals will have a chance to upgrade their roster quickly. So that's what I'm really curious about. Whether Monty Austenfort stays put, especially with those first round picks, and is content with 4 and 27, if there is a lot of shifting to acquire more picks. Regardless, after that third day of the draft on Saturday, what does this ranking look like? Because they've got an opportunity to make some leaps and bounds in terms of adding talent to this roster.
Yeah, and but it also highlights the pressure to hit on a good amount of these picks, because if you're that low still after free agency, and the Cardinals were not what you would, by any stretch of the imagination, overly active in free agency, I think you're looking at a football team that there's a lot of pressure on him to produce some players, ready-made football players.
I see what you're saying. They were active. It just wasn't active in the splash market.
In the splash market,
They brought in some guys they think can help. Guys that are going to obviously at the defensive line position with what they did at the defensive line position, plugging some holes. But it wasn't anything that was going to knock anybody off the chair.
No, because they're still sitting at 29 in that particular list. And again, I think that culture was great last year. The talent has got to improve this year. So, but again, I also think when you factor in what might be on the table with the Cardinals, it's not just adding talent. It's also, what are you going to get out of Kyler Murray? And if you can really get another step forward from him, then I think it's going to make everything look better than you might think it might. How does that sound? That it might Perfect. Think you might. Maybe.
Allow myself to introduce myself.
Right, exactly.
The teams below the Cardinals, by the way, on this list from Austin Mock, 30 New York Giants, 31 Carolina Panthers, 32 Washington Commanders.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
At the top of the list, not surprisingly, San Francisco 1, Kansas City 2, Baltimore 3, Buffalo 4, Philadelphia 5. Surprised Buffalo's still in the top 5.
The Panthers have made, I mean, they were so terrible last year, but they spent a lot of money on free agency to try to get better this year. Mm-hmm.
They certainly did. I mean, that's what you have to do. And here we are, now a week away from the draft. Now we're kicking into high gear.
1 week from today, right?
Yeah, I'm wondering, we'll both be part of the NFL draft show next Thursday here on Arizona Sports on 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app. What is that temptation? There was a graphic crawl on NFL Network this morning. Cardinals open to trading the 4th overall pick. I think Monty Austin Ford is going to be presented with a lot of opportunity
from
different teams. He's going to weigh offers from different teams against each other. That's the way I think it's going to go.
Listen, I see these mock drafts where the trade goes down with the Chargers, and that's unfortunately that's also a possibility. I don't think it really all depends, I think, on if there's going to be competition for that 4th quarterback. And then of course, if the Patriots go in a different direction, which I would be stunned if they did not draft a quarterback, given everything that's gone on in New England, given the fact they don't have one.
They have Jacoby Brissett.
And he's good.
He's a stopgap guy. Mm-hmm. And if they've got cold feet about investing a high draft pick on a quarterback again after the Mac Jones experience, I understand it. They might be able to address it later in the draft.
Where did the Patriots rank on that list of talent level on rosters?
It stood out to me, too. The Patriots were above the Cardinals. They were already all the way up at number 20.
Ridiculous.
Which that's one that I looked and I said, wow, that is not a team that is flush with talent.
Which is odd, because you would think that, obviously the quarterback piece with Mac Davis did not work in New England, but you would think that under Bill Belichick's reign, he would draft good defensive players and good offensive line, and they didn't even do that.
No, they didn't. 1 week away from the draft. It's a good time of the year. Coming up next, the Arizona Coyotes finished up their season. They finished up their stay in the desert for now. We will talk to Todd Walsh, longtime Coyotes broadcaster, about the farewell next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Yeah, I think that's probably the toughest part is leaving the fans. Obviously, what they've done for me and my family, and how much they've supported the Coyotes over the years, and in a way of it's been hard. Like I've been there with them, where it's been a hard 20, 25 years of not knowing where home's going to be. So it's one of those where you want to send them off on the right note and get the win tonight for them.
Yes, Josh Doan of the Arizona Coyotes, a hard 20, 25 years of not knowing where home is going to be. Well, that comes to an end. So does the tenure of the Coyotes for now in the desert. Here to talk about it with us, longtime Coyotes television broadcaster Todd Walsh joins us here on the Arizona Sports Line. Todd, thanks so much for getting up early today. We appreciate the time as always. And I just want to start by saying your farewell last night, the story you told, brilliant. Well done. You are equipped to handle moments like that, and you knocked it out of the park, man.
Well, first of all, I'm not getting up because I've been up, and I appreciate that. And I'm just glad I had an opportunity to do that. I think at the start of that, guys, I've been sort of preparing for this moment, but I never thought it would be when the team was turning out the lights after we were done with our broadcast and leaving town. But I just wanted to speak from the heart, and I wanted to thank the game and acknowledge briefly somehow, some way, the people in it, because if you've been around the sport for even a minute, I think you start to understand and realize that there's nothing quite like the sport of hockey and the people in it and the great reverence that they have for anyone that puts time into the game. And the phrase that I've learned along the way is, be good to the game and the game will be good to you. And on a very, very personal note, I can speak to that, and I wanted to do that, and I'm very lucky that I was able to do that. So I just want to make sure the sun came up today, and I can vouch that it's up, so yeah. We move on, right?
Yeah, I got you. So for those who didn't see you last night, why don't you go ahead and elaborate and frame up exactly how this feels to you? For a guy like me who has seen all the dysfunction, who have seen all the great characters and the great players and the interesting eras, to watch it all just kind of go elsewhere now. Frame that up for our listeners.
I'm still trying to do that, and I you know, I had to kind of walk a fine line because nothing had been announced and has been announced, and, you know, to be candid, I suddenly was employed specifically by the Coyotes, so there was a place that I had to reside in my head and on the air. But I think the overwhelming sentiment that I felt last night, when you would walk up to someone, and it was fascinating. It felt like a wake, because you'd walk up, you'd see somebody that you recognize. Maybe you haven't seen them in a while. There's the eye contact first, and the eyes just are the windows to the soul. And you know right away that they're going to come in for a handshake, and then it's an embrace. And the embrace lasts a little longer than maybe you would have expected, or maybe you give it back. And then the first words that one of us would say, It was universal. This didn't have to happen. That's what I kept hearing, and then I started to repeat it, and that's how I feel today. And, you know, I'm not smart enough to talk about finances when you're getting into the billions of dollars, but I am smart enough to know how things can work, and I've seen it work, and I've seen the due diligence that has been done and has to be done in a situation like this, and in cultivating a sport. And I've seen how it has failed, and the speed in which this thing just flipped and turned and the doors were closed tells me so much about so many different things. But it also speaks to me to what I feel is the frustration of the National Hockey League and Gary Bettman. And my fear all along, Dan, going into this for the last few years, was at some point someone's going to walk up to a microphone in front of a bunch of cameras and say, we did everything we could. And I have a feeling we're going to hear that. And I don't want to hear it from the current ownership, but I feel like we're going to hear that. And that's what troubled me. And then you just, you know, if you spend any time with this sport, you realize it's about more than just the highest level of it. It's the organic nature. It's, you know, it's the hockey community. It's the hockey families. And you just know that people have invested so much in this thing. It does take a village to put a hockey player together, and it costs a ton of money and the commitment that it takes. So when I walked out of there last night, I just felt like this just didn't have to happen. And, you know, I've stood on the mountaintop and screamed and yelled to anyone that would listen over the years. I finally just shut up. But when I used to say and write and present that, you know, hockey in the desert, it, you know, why not? I think was the phrase that we launched one year in our broadcast. And I've seen it. I mean it. But I've also been in the eye of the storm, and, you know, I've traveled in and out of Canada, and I know there's just a huge difference in the sports psyche in Canada for that sport. Yep. And here, and you just have to try harder here. You just do. I said 1,000 years ago. That I think the earliest success for the Coyotes was because they were like Avis Rent-A-Car. They tried harder, and that started to change. And there was an entitlement and an arrogance about it from different phases of ownership and presentation on the business side that began to erode the support. And you can't let that go. Not in a market like this. Not at, you know, a desert oasis and a transient market. So well, that's sort of how I would frame it to you, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Todd Walsh, Coyotes broadcaster, our guest here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. What complicates this for a lot of people is not only the goodbye at this point, but it's goodbye with an asterisk. With this plan that is going to be announced, that has been leaked about maybe a future expansion franchise coming, a lot of people look towards that with enthusiasm and optimism. What is your confidence level right now as we speak this morning, Todd, that the NHL will return to the Valley in you know, a semblance of reasonable time?
Show me the money.
Yeah.
I want to believe in that. I want to believe there's going to be an investment and a continuation of the support of you know, the organic aspect of youth hockey and in every single level in the state, which, by the way, gets mocked all around North America until you show up in Arizona and you go to a sheet of ice and it's open at 6 a.m. and it's full till 11 p.m. You can go ahead and do that and throw stones at it and never show up here, which a lot of our peers north of the border have done, and I've seen it. But I just know, I was on the air when the Minnesota Wild came back, or the NHL came back to Minnesota with the Wild. I remember how long that took, and I lived the whole Winnipeg experience, and I know how long that took. I believe that the NHL is committed to this market. I really do. I don't think they ever wanted to lose it. I think things got very complicated, and that's not for me to speak to right now, but I don't know when that happens. I would just say to myself, does it really need another rink? Does it really need another gigantic sports palace? Does it really? Are people really going to do that? I don't know if the economy demands that. We all went through the pandemic when I don't know. I'm not sure how that happens. I believe that there will be a team here. I'm not sure if I'm standing holding a microphone in that period of time, that's for sure. But they desperately love this market, and I think they don't want to turn their backs on it. But things are going to have to happen before that ever happens, and I don't know when that is.
All right, so many moments of dysfunction that we have shared, that we have talked about with this hockey team, but in talking to Doner yesterday, he didn't hesitate to say the one do-over that they wish they could have had was Los Arcos. If you could have planted this hockey team down just outside of Old Town Scottsdale, way back at the turn of the century, imagine what might have been. How often do you think of that? And what would have been?
I think about it a lot because I was so intimately involved in that whole process. And I remember when the election failed, and I remember what they did to turn the tables on the election. I remember walking in the night that they won the vote. We did our radio shows out there, and I looked. This was like at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I looked into their little backstage area, and there was champagne. And I thought, wow, that's presumptuous. And then I talked to some movers and shakers in the Coyotes, and they said, we know we've won. We've done the work on this. And think about that statement, by the way, when you go back to the Tempe vote. We've done the work on this. And they went about the business of winning the election, and they went about the business of canvassing write-in ballots, early votes, et cetera, and they knew how to get it done. And when I think about Los Arcos, though, I think about how it just flipped so uniquely to someone that just really wasn't a hockey guy, but he wanted real estate and he wanted to build a mall. And then it's the not quite bullseye of ownership.
Yes.
I just want someone that just wants to run a hockey team.
Yes, that just wants to lift the Stanley Cup.
Yeah. That's it.
That's
Please.
It. That's it. Oh, man. Well, I echo what my partner says. You have been such an incredible asset for the team, framing up this team for decades, making sense of it, bringing heart and soul to it all. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for all you did, Todd. Yep.
Thanks. And thanks for joining us today, Todd. We'll talk Diamondbacks soon. What do you say?
I have time, and I appreciate that. You guys know how I feel about you and the radio station that you're on, and this has just been a remarkable 24 to 48 hours. I'm sorry I couldn't come on yesterday, but I'm glad.
It's all good.
I couldn't wait to talk to you, so thank you for having me. And to Coyote fans, I meant what I said. We walked together forever.
Yep. Great stuff, Todd. Thank you so much. Todd Walsh, longtime Coyotes broadcaster, also Diamondbacks broadcaster, joining us here on the Arizona Sports Line. I have a feeling I know what a lot of the Rush Hour reboot's going to be about today. But we're going to cover it all next with Sarah Cazell. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bickley and Murata Mornings. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. Arizona built for America's dreams.
Welcome on into the Rush Hour Reboot, everybody. Here on Bickley and Murata Mornings, we are catching you up on what you need to know. And as Vince alluded to before the break, yes, we are starting with the Arizona Coyotes. I'm Sarah Cazell with Dan Bickley.
Hey!
Vince Murata.
No, I thought it generally sucked. I didn't think it was a specific suck. I thought it was like an all-encompassing type of suck.
Yeah, it wasn't all.
One of the quotes of the year, but.
Type of suck. And Jarrett Carlin.
Well, if anybody needs a ride to the airport or you need your palms trimmed or something, give me a call.
Yeah, I'll be working Uber for a while. I'm right there with you, Uber Eats.
Yeah, if anyone wants to hire some Coyotes employees, they're on the market. And they're wonderful people who are great at what they do. So you should. All right, we're going to start there with a very, very sad night at Mullet Arena last night as the Coyotes played their final game as the Arizona Coyotes. We still don't have a formal announcement from the NHL, but our John Gambadoro says the NHL Board of Governors will approve the sale today. They beat the Oilers last night, 5-2, yay, so they go out with a win. Afterward, Clayton Keller shared what playing for this team for 8 seasons has meant to him.
It means everything. You know, I grew up here. I played my whole career here. You know, like I said, there's so many, you know, great people that are in this organization, you know, great teammates. You know, I could go out on the list of, you know, the sacrifices that everyone does, you know, for us to perform. So it's definitely, you know, it's tough. And, you know, hopefully the NHL will be back here, you know, in a couple of years.
Okay, hopefully the NHL comes back in a couple of years. That echoes what Shane Doan said, the Coyotes great, yesterday on our show. Although Doaner didn't really say he hopes that the NHL returns. He says hockey will be back in the Valley. So a little bit more definitive from Doaner. Right now, how confident are you two that that will be true?
That hockey will come back here? Yeah, I would think it will come back here at some point in time. Vinny kind of laid it out there, the general lag time. But this is a market nearing 6 million people. It's a boom market, for better and or worse.
Right.
And those big numbers. And if you look at it with clear eyes, you know that hockey does work here, contrary to public opinion. So it to me, I do think it will be back. But like Vinny said, it's not coming back to this ownership group. And if he's got a 5-year window, then what does that mean? Is that just the NHL going, hey, there's no way in the world he's going to build this? Is the NHL talking with a potential replacement to Alex Morello, telling him to go win that land auction? I don't know. I really don't know, but I don't think it'll be with this ownership group. I can tell you that much.
No.
And as Vinny said, nor should it.
That's where my doubt lies, is the ability of this ownership group to get it done. And again, how much support are they going to get from the public with this ownership group? And to Bick's point, yes, it's a boom market. The NFL was not in Los Angeles for 20 years.
Yeah, think of that.
Things have to happen to make things a reality. Mm-hmm. And right now, I'm a pessimist by nature. I know people are saying, wow, really?
Didn't
know. But I'm pessimistic on this as it stands right now, knowing what we know. Will we get more answers when Gary Bettman finally makes this announcement? I think so, but right now I'm not very confident.
Yeah. For the record, I am not a pessimist by nature, but I share the same feeling with you. I'm not very confident about
this. Welcome to the dark side.
But see, the thing is, it's going to take that special person who is not only going to buy the land, but get shovels in the ground and hire architects and woo the politicians. Somebody is going to have to go deep in their pocket to make this happen.
And what Todd Walsh said, amen. How about an owner that just wants to own a hockey team?
Not be a real estate developer.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, let's get to the Suns. We had James Jones on our show yesterday, the Suns GM and president of basketball operations, ahead of the first round series between the Suns and the Timberwolves starting on Saturday. You guys asked him about playoff expectations, and James Jones said, now that Devin Booker and Kevin Durant have had a whole season's worth of experience together, unlike the playoffs last year, their approach becomes much simpler this postseason.
Like last year, we were trying to figure out who's going to be the guy that we give, you know, the keys to at the end of the game. When do we give them? Where do we place them? You know, how do they play together? How do you stagger their minutes? And how do you divide their usage? And I think this year, those two have been on such a great page that it's allowed the rest of the team to settle. And so this year, I think more than anything, we're healthy. And the task in front of us is simpler. It's just go out there and compete on the defensive end and let our defense fuel our offense.
Do you guys think the Suns are better positioned today for a deep playoff run than they were last year?
Yes, I do. All things considered and knowing now what we didn't know exactly going in. There was a lot of mystery last year going into that postseason.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean they'll get any further, but I think they're better equipped to do so.
Yeah, I seem to think we were all in agreement that the roster was in a better shape going into this year than it was at the end of last year. Now, I the season hasn't necessarily bore that out, and there's been they traded their entire bench to bring in Royce O'Neal, and there's been change. But my gut instinct agrees with Vinny. Yes, they've got a third star in Bradley Beal who is peaking at the right time.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with Vinny.
All right, we have that full James Jones interview on ArizonaSports.com for anyone who might have missed it yesterday. We also have, like I've been mentioning in my updates, some really strong Coyotes coverage from last night. We have a new column from our Dan Bickley. Hi, Dan. About where the blame really should lie. We have photos from last night. We have videos from last night. And we have a whole bunch of just notes and nuggets from Tyler Drake, you know, keeping track of the different chants and jeers coming from the crowd. Alex Meruelo, notably not in the building last night, by the way. Forgot to mention that earlier.
Did anybody expect him to be? I didn't.
No.
And by the way, one of those chants.
Expect is not the right word.
I know there's a lot of frustration.
What, the Salt Lake Sucks? The
Salt Lake Sucks chant was a little much, I thought. Do you have thoughts on that, Bic?
Yeah, a little much. But again, I think for the most part, I think the tone and the temperament was a lot better than what it could have been. It could have been pure on ugly.
I agree.
Yeah. You know?
I agree.
What about Ryan Smith sucks? What do we think about that?
That would be more appropriate, I think, because I do think that Ryan Smith and his, hey, I'm just here to help. That's a little bit, yeah. He definitely tampered.
Meruelo.
Yeah, right.
Blank. You have to clap that one out.
The blank Meruelo has a nice ring to it. Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't try that.
There is some
four syllables.
There.
Blank Meruelo.
Yeah.
And not the guitarist from Rage Against the Machine.
No. Thank you, Sarah.
We're
all rebooted. Rush Hour Rebooted. Every morning at 7:30. Coming up next, we'll talk some D-backs baseball with the president and CEO of the team, Derek Hall, for his weekly visit here on Bickley and Murata Mornings, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Mr. Speaker, the president. I have the high privilege and distinct honor to present to you the president.
He's the president and CEO of your Arizona Diamondbacks.
Hail to the chief.
Derek Hall.
The president.
On Now with Bickley and Murata. Brought to you by All Pro Shade Concepts. Visit allproshade.com to schedule your free estimate on motorized awnings or roll down shades. Stay cool with All Pro Shade Concepts.
Yes, Derek Hall joins us for his weekly visit right now here on the Arizona Sports Line. A good morning to you, Derek.
Well, good morning. It's a sad morning, though, Vince. That's for sure.
It is. And that's where I wanted to start. Obviously, as the chief executive officer of a baseball team in Phoenix, Arizona, that has some concerns about its home, its stadium. How do you reconcile, you know, what's going through your mind when you see what the fate of the Arizona Coyotes became?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of thoughts. I watched that game last night. It was sad. I just heard Todd, and he's got so much love for the sport and for that franchise, and he and I were texting back and forth last night during the game. I just really feel for their employees, for the fans. It's a wake-up call, though. It really is. Not to us, but to every team and every market and every city, that it can happen quickly. I mean, there were always rumors, but, I mean, we blinked, and it became a reality. Yeah. And here was a very aggressive market that snatched a team and took care of took advantage of a situation, and now they've got our franchise. But, you know, you mentioned earlier L.A., and I, of course, spent a lot of time in L.A., and we would watch football teams come and go. And granted, there were a lot of years between some of the landings, but no one really worried. You know, that's a big wasteland and a big city, and people don't really connect so much with their teams as much as we should and do in the smaller market like ours. But it's sad to see that happen. We can't lose teams. I mean, there's a guarantee in L.A. that you're going to get a team back. Right now there's uncertainty, but I've said all along, even on this show with you guys, we can have, you know, the major sports here. We should have the major sports here, and we shouldn't lose franchises. And I don't know where the blame falls. That's not so important. It's how do we make sure that doesn't happen in the future?
Yeah, all on board with that. And what you just said is a cautionary tale too, because if other markets that want a baseball team see an opportunity, they might come through that window just like Ryan Smith did. So what needs to happen next for this not to be the fate of the Diamondbacks?
Yeah, Beck, I think we're in such a different situation. I can't speak for the Coyotes. I know they tried, and I still think it's a shame that it happened. I think they should be here, and hopefully one day they'll be back. You know, we have an ownership group that is not looking to sell. They don't want to sell. They want to stay right here. We're not looking for a new facility, were we? You know, I mentioned kicking the tires. Of course, you know, I did my due diligence. I had to look everywhere, including new locations. And would I have loved the new shiny stadium? Sure, every team would, right? But there's plenty of opportunity right here at Chase Field, and so many memories we've made here for over 25 years. I just think we continue to work hard, and we're going to with the city, the county, and the state, and find a solution. And I'm confident we can. I really do think so. But you know, again, this is not our stadium yet. We play here, and we want to make it the nicest stadium possible. That's why we're looking for that partnership. And I, again, I think there's a solution there, Bick, you know, to keep us here for many, many more years, and to be able to hopefully develop more of downtown. And we've invested in downtown. We want to continue to. We have no plans of leaving. And, you know, we love this stadium. We love this location. And this is where we want the solution to be.
Derek Hall, President and CEO of the Arizona Diamondbacks, our guest here on Bickley and Marotta Mornings. To the on-field product, frustrating series, I think, against the Cubs. You dropped 2 out of 3. Some sloppiness continues to pop up. 9-10 at this point. I know it's still very early, but what do you make of the on-field performance that's going on right now, Derek?
Let's get back to relocation and then stadium problems.
That's fantastic.
I know, I got to tell you, I mean, as much as this could offend our team and our fans, I mean, we have played awful baseball, right? But I look at it and I think, you know, the last couple of days, and we had fans that were so excited, and I'm hearing from them as I do, and I love that. But after we won that game the other night, and they're, whoa, what a great game. This was an epic game. We got to watch this one over and over. I'm like, no, we were awful. You know, we were lucky to win that game. I think if you look at our series Monday night, we never should have lost that game. Tuesday night, we never should have won that game. And yesterday was an unbelievable game, right? Uh-huh. I mean, Fott was pitching great, but our offense just hasn't been there. But if you think about it, and you just mentioned events, we're 9-10, so we're a game under 500. Yet, and we've always said, if we can get through this first month, as tough as the schedule is, and be somewhere around 500, and we didn't even anticipate all the injuries. I mean, we're playing, let's think about this, without our center fielder, without our shortstop, without two of our starters in the rotation, and without our closer. And that is tough. And you look at the bottom of our order, and no offense to anyone that's penciled in there, but what a difference it makes when Perdomo's in there, right? He finds a way to get on base. He turns the lineup back over. So it's just a different team. And as bad as we've played, as tough a schedule as we have played to be one game under 500, we've played the Yankees. You know, we played the Cubs. We played the Cardinals. We had to go on the road. You can laugh and play the Rockies. That's a tough place to play. We played the Braves. So a really tough schedule, and we're a game under 500 with all those injuries. I'm thrilled with where we're at in a weird way.
Right. It's actually not a bad thing, especially with Jordan Montgomery joining the team here very, very soon. Your thoughts on that, and then how far out are we holding hope that Eduardo Rodriguez isn't going to go beyond these 60 days?
Yeah, I think so, Beck. I mean, first, Montgomery, we're really excited about him joining the rotation. I mean, how deep can he go at this point? We've seen some of the guys that sign late. You know, it's going to take some time for players and pitchers like Montgomery to get back in stride. And, you know, he's going to pitch Friday at San Francisco. That's a tough series for us. And by the way, you know, we've had trouble scoring with runners in scoring position, and have fun. Here's Logan Webb. But, you know, we've got Montgomery going, which is nice. I think your question about Erod, I believe he'll be ready about then, Bick. We're hoping so. I mean, it looks like the end of May, obviously, if you take the 60 days into equation. Yeah. But I would think end of May, early June. But I do like the way Nelson's thrown the ball. We'll see him again tonight. I think he'll fill in fine for the time being.
Yeah, and then finally the defensive thing, and we've talked about this with Torrey. You can Torrey's about as chill, easygoing most times as you're going to find. But the defensive lapses drive him insane, as they should. This has been a calling card of your organization for years.
It's who Torrey is, and nothing frustrates him more than not playing clean baseball. And for us to give the opposition opportunities continuously, I mean, we did it this entire homestand, kicking the ball around. That's not like us. And we've got really good defenders. I've watched Suarez for his entire career, but especially this year. And we sit up there and talk, and like Gonzo, every time a ground ball comes to Suarez, if it's a double play and how he feeds it perfectly to second, we marvel over the way he fields. And then he had trouble. Yeah, that's not who we are. The trouble in the corners with Gurriel. Again, I think we are going to clean it up, and sometimes I think you press. We talk about how contagious no hitting is. We talk about how contagious great starts are. Well, I think the same thing with clean fielding, and that's not the mark of D-backs baseball, but I know we're going to get back on track. And again, I'm excited about where we're going. I can't wait till we're healthy. I know Alec's getting closer. Seawald's getting closer. Let's get this team back in shape, back in good health, get that bullpen back in the position that it should be. I mean, we've got guys throwing where they're not used to throwing. You saw how important it was last year to bring Seawald in. Well, it's equally as important to get him back in the bullpen now healthy.
Derek, always good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
for the
Steve.
Time. Best of luck on the road trip, and we'll speak again next Thursday.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Vince. Thanks, Vic. Talk to you next week.
Derek Hall, President and CEO of the Arizona Diamondbacks, joins us weekly here on Bickley and Marotta Mornings. What you get daily at 8 o'clock? It's next. It's the Bickley Blast. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.